A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 260. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Robert's Robots. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, it's time for some children's comedy, and in particular a show that ran from 1973 to 1974 on ITV. It got two series, both of 7 episodes, in a fairly typical sort of 25-minute format with a break for commercials in the middle. So 14 episodes in all. And as the name suggests, we're going to have some mechanical hijinks with humanoid robots and with their creator. And all sorts of confusions are going to arise about robots and humans and their differences and similarities, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. It has the feel of a British-style sitcom, but done for children.
Yes. We should perhaps stress right from the outset, this is very definitely a children's show.
Yes. So the setup for this, Robert Summerby is a government-backed scientist working on advanced robotics in his country house, which happens to have a secret laboratory constructed inside it. And he is always attempting to advance his work and make these humanoid robots more sophisticated, and he's building new ones. And he is also being pursued by industrial espionage with a couple of sort of bumbling private detectives.
Yes, that's right. There's all sorts of farcical elements with the spies and the private eyes. And of course, most of all, he's been blocked in his efforts to concentrate on his work by his very own creations, the robots of the title, robots of varying degrees of sophistication, from some lumbering giants to some very intelligent humanoid robots. But even then, the intelligence causes a problem as they find constant puzzles in dealing with human behavior.
Yes, absolutely. And we do, as you say, have a sort of farcical humor and some fairly clever things going on in the humor at times, which does make things interesting with this one. It has the silliness in it, but there are other layers with the comedy as well, I think.
Okay, let us talk through the characters. Obviously, we have the Robert of the title, Robert Summerby himself, played by the very familiar comic actor from the period, John Clive. The one thing that always seems to get mentioned about John in his various pages about him on the internet and on DVD covers is that he provided the voice of the John Lennon character in the animated film Yellow Submarine. And obviously did a pretty good turn at that one, I think.
Yes, for sure.
And he plays this eccentric but brilliant scientist who, as we said, is juggling the demands of work and life, trying to keep all the plates spinning and the balls in the air, and usually failing quite catastrophically and, of course, humorously as things come crashing down around him.
Eric, played by Nigel Pegram, is one of Robert's most advanced robots, with a rather odd sort of red-colored eyebrow and a streak in his hair. So slightly unusual look. And he is almost the C-3PO of this, although this predates Star Wars. But he is the sort of uptight and uncomfortable robot who is very sort of quick and sophisticated and intelligent, but very tense and stressed out.
Yes, and I like the comparison with C-3PO. It's not one that occurred to me, Brian, but yes, that is a good comparison for him. He is that polite, uptight, bright, and constantly perplexed by the behaviours he encounters, robot. Yeah, interesting.
But of course, more or less human-looking.
Yes, completely human-looking, apart from these two odd red streaks, as you say, one in his hair, one on his eyebrow, and his slightly robotic walk and movements. R2-D2, we don't have really have R2-D2. Instead, we have KT, recalled by everybody as KT, played by Brian Coburn. This is a much earlier robot, a huge lumbering man with a silver fright wig and silver skin. And he plays, Brian Coburn plays, I think, a fairly familiar character from comedies of this period, which is the huge lumbering giant with a heart of gold who wouldn't hurt a fly, but is constantly getting things wrong, crashing through doors, not knowing his own strength, pulling things off and handles off things and so on. So played for obviously for some comic relief with the big giant who just keeps crashing into stuff.
Yeah, Coburn plays him as a child, you know, as maybe a five-year-old. In his reactions to things, he'll react with a smile that looks like a small child reaction. He will misinterpret things and sort of simplify things in a very childish type of way.
Yes, good point. I mean, he is almost the Boris Karloff Universal films, Frankenstein's monster, but obviously without the sinister overtones at all. He is completely harmless and benign and only causes trouble when he blunders into things or misinterprets instructions, as he usually does. We should mention Roberts, as well as his robots, he's got his girlfriend, his fiancée, in fact, Angie, played by the actress Jenny Hanley. You may know her as one of the Bond girls in Blofeld's base in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. You may also recognise her from the Hammer horror film Scars of Dracula, in which she starred with Christopher Lee. But perhaps if you're a child of the 70s, you may be thinking, aha, Jenny Hanley, that's the lady from Magpie, ITV's long-running and successful children's show, their sort of answer to Blue Peter. And, of course, the humour that comes from Robert having a fiancée, Angie, is that nobody is really supposed to know about his work. Everybody knows he's a scientist, but they don't know what he's working on. And in particular, they don't know that he's constructing humanoid robots, which is fine when Eric's around. But if KT appears, obviously there has to be a fair bit of hustling people out the way so that he doesn't get seen. So Angie knows nothing about what goes on in this sort of basement laboratory of the country house. She just knows that she has this slightly eccentric fiance who she comes to see, and he's forever distracted by some pending or looming disaster or other.
Yes, and she is used for a lot of the sort of farcical humor where she will hear something that Robert is saying referencing Katie and thinks that he has another girlfriend on the side, and, you know, these sorts of things. So it's very, her character fits into that very much.
And of course, when Robert builds a robot version of himself, well, you can see what's going to happen straight away. And there's more humor to be exploited from that situation.
Oh, yes, of course. Aunt Millie, played by Doris Rogers, is Robert's aunt. She is living with him, and she is in on the whole thing. She knows about the robots and knows all of them, and fits in with the sort of comic style of the time as the elderly aunt, slightly dotty, what have you. And in addition, she has this really nice friendship with Katie, where she is talking to him as a child, which is how he's behaving, and they build up something that's sort of nice there.
It is sort of touching, actually, Aunt Millie and Katie. Obviously, a lot of laughs from the situation. It does tend to be the same joke quite a few times, unfortunately, Brian. But yes, it is quite touching the way she has adopted this rather simple, childlike, lumbering robot.
Then we go to even more comic characters with Markin, played by Leon Lissick, who is an industrial spy from an electronics company and possibly connected with some unnamed foreign power. He has a rather heavy Eastern European accent, and he is looking to steal the secrets of whatever Robert Summerbee is working on, and he doesn't know that it's robots, but he is determined to find out what that is, and his accent and poor English are used for comedy, and they do a lot of sort of farcical comedy there as well.
Yes, very much so. And of course, he's assisted in his attempts at industrial espionage by two private detectives, both of them equally fairly useless at their jobs, it would appear. In the first series, we have a character called Gimble, Welsh actor Richard Davis, who you may recognise from the classic British movie Zulu. He is a rather clumsy private detective hired by Marken to spy on Robert and his goings-on. And then, interestingly, obviously, he didn't come back for Series 2, Richard Davis. So instead of the character Gimble, in Series 2, we get another private detective, Plummer, played by David Pugh, who, interestingly, appears to be just trying to play, even though he's got a different name, he appears to be trying to play it exactly the same as Richard Davis, or just slightly more dim-witted, I should think. But he's doing a very similar comical Welsh accent, and there's various bits of his clothing that always seem to be awry, the hat that's on the wrong angle and so on, that makes him look rather ridiculous, and he gets into more and more scrapes as they sort of penetrate some of the secrets of Robert's robots. I think by the time of the second series, they're beginning to realize that Summerbee's making robots.
Yeah, they do eventually figure it out, and there is sort of a shift where they sort of take on a slightly different role in the series. But yeah, David Pugh's Plummer, they refer to him as the person Gimble recommended when Gimble had, you know, when Gimble wanted to get out. So it was almost like this is the second choice, and the person that maybe Gimble doesn't like, who he's pawning off on Marken.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. Some comic foils for Marken and for the rest of the cast. And there's all sorts of comedy to be had from their repeated terrible attempts to penetrate Robert's laboratory and find his secrets.
Yes, absolutely. So in Series 1, Robert has to justify his work to a man from the Ministry, while Marken and Gimble are snooping around to try to figure things out. And this idea of justifying to the Ministry so his grant can be continued or not reduced or increased, that comes up a couple of times. And Katie has apparently fallen in love with a gas cooker, a gas stove, and always seems to forget to open doors before walking through them, and occasionally walks through walls as well.
Yes, how many times do you think they use that joke, Brian?
Oh, I don't know. I lost count.
Yes, I mean, clearly it's hilarious, I should think, to young children watching at the time to see a huge silver-skinned man lumber through a door. But they do rather run that one at pretty much every episode, at least in the first season.
Well, the follow-up to that is almost always Aunt Millie saying to Katie, "Now, what did we do wrong?" Katie has to say, "We didn't open the door before walking through it." And that interaction is, while it is repetitive, it's sort of nice. It's a nicely done little thing they slip in there.
Yes, there is some charm to it. Meanwhile, we've got Robert and Eric, his robot. So he's got this super intelligent robot who often is helping him with his researches when Eric is not off pursuing his own interests and his own sort of research and development. So Robert and Eric are experimenting with cleaning robots and entertainer robots, which we'll come back to in just a moment. And then Robert decides that Eric needs kinder, gentler programming, so that leads to some amusement. And then, of course, on top of this, there's Robert Robot himself when he makes his double, and all you can imagine the comedy of errors that will ensue from that. There's a robot strike to be dealt with, and the regular visits from Angie, who is going to come along, and everything's got to be hushed up. Katie's got to be kept out of the way. Various robots have got to be sort of stopped from doing their unusual behaviours in her line of sight. And, of course, she'll meet Robert's robot, often just as Robert's gone out the room, and his robot will come in through another door in typical farcical fashion.
Yes, that's right. We have Robert's robot, and then we have Robert Robot, which is the robot duplicate of Robert. But we do certainly get all of those sorts of things played for comedy. We also have things like robots deciding to run away or being sent off to do something and going out in public and being seen and different things happening in that way.
Okay, so we should talk now about production notes for Robert's Robots, and we have to say it was a bit of a challenge this time, Brian.
Yeah, there isn't that much information about this show, but there are some things we know about the production. It was created by the writer Bob Block, who started writing radio comedies for Arthur Askey and Frankie Howard, and he had a successful kids show in 1972 called Pardon My Genie.
Yes, the sort of comic scrapes that a genie could get into in apparently a hardware store where somebody worked in the store had somehow or another activated a genie. So there you can imagine what went on then. He does Robert's Robots for ITV Thames Television's network in 1973. And I have to say, one of the great charms of the DVDs we're going to be talking about in a moment is you do get the Thames Television ident, which really takes me back to my childhood. And then Bob Block goes on to create a show probably with a much bigger and better reputation than Robert's Robots, the incredibly successful Rent-A-Ghost, this time on the BBC. And if you're wondering to yourself, oh yes, I remember Rent-A-Ghost, I wonder how long that ran for. Well, it ran for an astonishing 8 years between 1976 and 1984. There has been suggestions that it's a show we might cover in the future. Who knows? But yes, Rent-A-Ghost, again, the incredibly successful comedy show for kids about an agency that wasn't really allowed to tell anybody that its workers were all ghosts.
That is interesting. I did not know that it had such a long run.
Baffling, perhaps, as well.
Bob Block also created the BBC sci-fi comedy show Galloping Galaxies, so a lot of his work for ITV, but in that case BBC. That was in 1985, and it starred Kenneth Williams. And it has not had a video or DVD release.
Yes, I've got no idea about Galloping Galaxies, apart from the fact that Kenneth Williams was in it, which must have made it fairly uproarious. But yeah, who knows? If anybody knows more about Galloping Galaxies, please fill me in on the Facebook page.
Yes, for sure. Robert's Robots is also notable for early performances by a young Sylvester McCoy, the Seventh Doctor himself, and also Christopher Biggins.
Yes, that's right. I mean, on the covers and the blurbs for the DVDs, a couple of things get mentioned. One is that it's by the creator of Rent-A-Ghost. But the other thing that gets mentioned is featuring Sylvester McCoy and Christopher Biggins. Now,
that's a bit of an exaggeration.
Yes, it is a touch. In episode 4 from series 1, Dial C for Chaos, where Robert creates a line of 4 entertainer robots, which he thinks are going to be the next big thing and take over from entertainers at parties and on television. Two of them are, of course, an extremely young-looking Sylvester McCoy and, of course, the popular comic actor from Britain, Christopher Biggins. You know, if you're looking for your a touch of the Seventh Doctor, well, it really is blink and you'll miss it, Brian.
It is, but the entertainment robots were fun because, you know, it was this sort of very, you know, vaudeville or music hall kind of thing with these 4 actors as robots speaking in unison and all these different sorts of things, and seeing those early performances there is quite fun.
And of course, because it was the 70s, it was children's television, they're entertainer robots, so what are they armed with? Custard pies.
Of course.
There will be some gungeon along the way in that particular episode. So what else to say about the production of Robert's Robots? It does have quite a fun title sequence, and I do encourage you, if you can find it on YouTube, to at least look at the title sequence. It's some sort of like repetitive electronic music and a sort of combination of graphics and pictures of the actors and various lights and things flashing. It's quite fun, I think, Brian.
It's a rather odd title sequence, but it does sort of fit what they were doing at the time.
Yes, and I'm probably giving stuff away here, but in some cases I did find it more entertaining than the episode that followed. But that's getting into our next episode discussions, Brian.
Series one of Robert's Robots was broadcast in November and December of 1973. And it was clearly successful enough to be commissioned for a second series in the same time slot the following year.
Yes, so it comes back the following year, but of course we get some actor changes. By this time, Jenny Hanley had got that gig on Magpie, so she was very busy on television 5 days a week, I think. So she, her character, Angie, the fiancé, is on holiday throughout the entire second series. Likewise, Richard Davis, who played the bumbling private detective Gimble, had moved to Coronation Street, another regular acting gig on a very successful ITV programme. So he was replaced, as we've said, by David Pugh playing Plummer, but in many ways fairly indistinguishable from the character of Gimble in the first series.
Series 2 was broadcast in November and December of 1974, and it finishes with a Christmas episode, which we will talk about a little more next time.
Okay, so let's talk about availability. Very interestingly, in Region 2, we've got two separate DVDs. So the first series came out on network DVD, our old friends for bringing us this sort of classic television from the past. That was in 2010, that came out. 7 episodes, no extras that I can detect. Currently $4.99 on the Amazons. And it was followed up in 2013 by the second series, which, as I say, on the front cover says, from the creator of Rent-A-Ghost. Again, 7 episodes, no extras, $6.99 that's currently going for on Amazon. So you're talking about £12 here in the UK if you want to pick up both series. Nothing on the streamers, it's just those DVDs. And of course, as we might expect, over in Region 1, Brian,
there is no release of this in Region 1.
Shame. It never made it across the pond.
No, I don't think it did make it across the pond. But I understand, Eamon, that there are some clips on YouTube.
There's a few little bits and pieces. There aren't complete episodes, and of course we approve of that because we do like to buy the content properly because it encourages network DVD to keep putting out more releases. Yes, but do, if you can find the opening credits, do have a look at them. They are rather amusing, I think, and a little odd for a 1973 children's show.
Yes, for sure. So I think that wraps things up for the first half of our Robert's Robots discussion.
Very good. Yes, we'll come back next time and talk about Series 2. We'll yet again wonder about the difficulties of television comedy while trying to remember the age of the target audience for Robert's Robots.
And we will review and rate and recommend Robert's Robots.
Yep.
Recommend or not recommend, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll talk about that. And in the meantime, if you want to find our previous encounters with science fiction comedy, where can they find us, Brian?
You can find us at BritishInvaders.com, and all of our past episodes, comedy and otherwise, are there. If you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our group there and join in on the discussions.
Or come by the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com. British Invaders, proud member of that network. We go out on Monday and Tuesday evenings on their internet streaming radio shows, but you'll find several other shows that may pique your interest as well. Vognetwork.com.
Yes, indeed. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, Eamon in England signing off.